Well, I think nobody is going to be shocked to hear that the days of the Yellow Pages are dead. But I think there's a lot of things that people still hold on to, and they think, well, that's the way I've always done it. And it's not just relegated to the small business guy, the contractor. I think big businesses are stuck on these kind of things as well.
Welcome to the Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell. Talking business ownership, the nuts and bolts, and everything in between.
G'day and welcome to the Tradies Business Show. Was here actually finishing this episode off post-Christmas, but it was recorded pre-Christmas 2017. I took a holiday. I hope you did too, or had some sort of break, a bit of downtime, some renewal, and that you have already launched into 2018 like the space shuttle, preferably one of the more successful missions before they shut it down. Anyway, I had a fantastic Christmas, and I'm getting this episode out to you that I recorded with a mate of mine from the US of A, speaking of space shuttles. And Nick May from Walls by Design, he's been on the show a few times before. We mentioned the episodes in the interview that we recorded. And Nick's doing some pretty cool stuff. He's actually got to the stage now where his business essentially works without him, and he's off. He's created a media company. He's got multiple podcasts. He's doing speaking gigs, and he's doing some pretty cool stuff. But one of the things I really wanted to do is this Where Are They Now episode was check back in with him about his Facebook marketing and that little soundbite that you heard at the top of the show there, where so many of us do so many things because it's the way we've always done them. And that's not necessarily very bright, because the world changes. And as you know, there's plenty of sayings about adapt or die. So great chat with Nick. Always love talking to him on the show. He gives us his best rendition of an Australian accent, which I'm sorry, Nick, but it was pretty terrible, mate. I'm definitely going to claim the trophy for being able to replicate your accent, buddy. So strap yourself in, have a listen to this episode. Hope your 2018 has started well whenever you're listening to this, and I will see you on the flip side. So joining me on the Tradies Business Show podcast today is, I'm going to refer to this guy as a buddy of mine. We've spoken a few times now. I've appeared on his podcast. I think I co-hosted with him for an episode a whole bunch of months ago, or a long time ago. And it's great to have him back. I'm doing this as a bit of the Where Are They Now episodes, and checking in with some people I haven't spoken to for a while to see what they're up to. Nick May from Walls by Design, welcome back.
Well, good day.
Good day, mate. Nice effort, mate. And we were chatting about accents at the at the top of the show before I hit record. So that's a commendable effort, mate. But I as I said to you earlier, I just haven't come across anybody from the Northern Hemisphere that is able to do an Australian accent very well.
It's tough.
I'm sure they're out there. But yeah. So, mate, welcome back to the show. It's great to be chatting to you.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
It's always a pleasure having a bit of a yarn with you on the airwaves. Nick, there's been a fair bit of water under the bridge since we spoke last, for both of us, I suspect.
Yeah.
Mate, what's been going on for you?
Oh, you know, just hanging out. I mean, really, not a whole lot. I don't remember how long it's been since you and I spoke, and I'm going to guess it's been roughly about 2 years ago, because I think the last time we spoke, I was talking about Facebook, yes?
Yeah, I actually had to dig back in the archives of the Tradies Business Show episode. So for anybody who does want to go back and listen to the two interviews that I've done with Nick, they were both with back when Michaela and I were still co-hosting together. January 2015 was the first time. Episode 21, which is a long time ago in my podcasting development.
At least I was old enough to drink.
So episode 21 in January 2015, and then we had you back on the show a bit over 100 episodes later for 123, and it was February 2016, mate. We're currently talking a few days before Christmas in 2017. So you're right, man. It's almost 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. Lots has happened. I would say, let's see, what's the quick story? So we've grown about 60-65% year on year since speaking with you. We were speaking about Facebook pretty intensely, I believe, on that show, and that has continued to be very successful for us. And in fact, I think back then we were doing 10 or 12 times ROI, and now we've bumped it up to about 15 for 2017, and we'll do, you know, we'll do close to $600,000 worth of business through Facebook. And then, so next year we're hoping to leverage it a little bit more and get a little bit bigger ROI. And, we're going to push to try and do $1 million through Facebook.
Wow. So that's just through Facebook.
Yes, that's just Facebook. So we have other channels for marketing and, but that is definitely one of the strongest for us. One of the other channels that's really been coming on strong for us actually has been Google Ads. Now, we haven't been able to scale it, but we did get about a 40 times ROI this year on the money we spent on Google Ads. So one of the really fun and exciting things that's happened since you and I spoke, and this was about a year ago, I hired my first full-time marketing director. And if anybody remembers the chat we had before, I love marketing. And so it was a little bit of a harder hire for me because I always thought, well, I'll just always be the marketing guy, right? That's my job.
Yeah.
But I would say through interviewing and talking with other business owners, and we'll get into that in a second, but I really learned the importance of building the right team. And I really kind of understood that as the business owner, even though I'm not in the day-to-day anymore, I still wear a lot of hats. And in order to focus on marketing, and I really do believe that once you figure out the business that you're in, that you really have to market consistently and fervently. And with me traveling as much as I am now, I just knew I couldn't keep my foot on the pedal on a consistent basis. And so we hired somebody. Originally it was going to be a part-time intern. He lived on the other side of the country. When he answered the ad, he came to work for me. And I think within the first day we decided to push him to full time. And he, you know, like in any other small business, he had to wear a couple of different hats, but we've grown, we've added more people to the staff. And so now he's able to focus about 90% of his time on marketing. And so that's been kind of exciting.
That's brilliant, mate. Now, for anyone who hasn't listened to your earlier episodes, they won't know anything about Walls by Design and your business. So can you give us kind of the executive summary of all of the enterprises and entities and activities that you control in your huge empire, Nick?
Okay, so for the last 18 years, I have run a business called Walls by Design. We're an interior painting company. We focus on residential, and we focus just on the inside of the house. So we're a little bit of an anomaly in the fact that most painters will do just about anything. If it doesn't move, they'll paint it, right? And so we've kind of taken the other side of that, and so we focus on the inside of the house. We do like residential. We're actually trying to maybe tiptoe a little bit into light commercial, but we stay on the inside, and in fact, we don't do any staining work. So if you think about, you know, most people that want to hire a paint contractor, about 80% of that work in totality is just painting walls, ceiling, and trim. And so that's what we do. And we just do a lot of it. And so that's what we market. We are probably in Denver, we're the largest residential painting company that does focus on the inside of the house. The typical paint contractor that would focus on the inside only would be, you know, one guy, maybe a helper or two. But that's about kind of it as far as the competition of guys that focus on the inside of the house. And so right now we have a team of about 30 that make it happen for us. So that includes about 18 guys out in the field. Maybe actually 20 guys out in the field, 20, combination. What do you call the project manager? Do you call that guy in the field or do you call him in the office? I don't know.
It depends on the business. Yeah. Sometimes right. like maybe a site foreman or a sure. A foreman would be yeah. out in the field more commonly.
Yeah. So we probably have 16 guys that are actually producing. So painters. Wow. And then we have 3 sales and project managers. We've just hired our 4th one. And so he's going to start a 3-month training process that we've developed. And then I've got about 6 folks in the office. And then myself. So that's kind of the state of the painting business. And then, I started a podcast, about 3 years ago called The Chaise Lounge. And that was a podcast I started to market my painting business, but it wasn't to homeowners. It's directed at the interior design space. So I talk the business of interior design. We have, one of the top podcasts for that. Probably number 1 or number 2, just depending on the day, in iTunes. And that's kept me more and more busy as we've grown that audience. And that has also turned into its own business because now we have sponsorship and I have staff that help me produce that. And then we just launched a new podcast called The Business Brush. And that is a podcast where I'm on talking to paint contractors about how do you build a successful painting business. And so I interview successful guys that are doing like over $1 million. Then I'll interview guys that are younger that are doing, you know, less than 500. And we'll talk about strategy and how to grow their business. And yeah, so that's it. I mean,
that's it.
those are all the business. I guess those are all the businesses that I'm a part of. We've kind of started a media company called iMay Media, and that's what all the podcasts are going under. And we're we'll be starting some other ones as well, it'll all be content that's within the realm of, you know, home services, whether that's in the interior design space or, you know, contracting or something. But we have, we've kind of plans to grow that as a platform.
Yeah. Yeah. So mate, you sound like a very busy man. Actually, you always have, Nick. Like I've always picked up on your drive and just that, maybe the can-do attitude, as we would refer to down here as a can-do coconut, mate.
I like that. Can-do coconut. I always refer to it as get shit done. So
yeah. Well, I actually tripped over someone in New Zealand, funnily enough, who is they've called their company, I think, GSD Enterprises. so it's good little affirmation for them, but. Mate, last time we talked to you, we were talking specifically about Facebook for your painting business, and you were getting around a 12x return on investment. So for every $10 invested in Facebook, you were getting $120 in business back. You said that's gone up to 15x. There's a couple things I want to talk to you about, because a lot of trades and contractors, I think, are still perhaps a little skeptical or confused about marketing, and you are a marketer, and I think that's why you have so much going on with podcasts and sounds like you're crushing it with your download numbers. But what's been some of the hardest things for you as a contractor, as a tradesperson, getting good at marketing? Like what's some of the key aspects that if someone's listening to this, they should go and learn more about or school themselves on?
Well, I think nobody is going to be shocked to hear that the days of the yellow pages are dead. but I think there's a lot of things that people still hold on to, and they think, well, that's the way I've always done it. And it's not just relegated to the small business guy, the contractor. I think big businesses are stuck on these kind of things as well. You know, whether that's a banner ad or radio advertising or, you know, just some of the traditional ways to advertise. Mm-hmm. And our attention as consumers has completely changed. You know, we've all got this computer now in our pockets, and we walk around and you can't go anywhere and not see somebody with their face down. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's where people are spending their time. And so for us as as business owners, we got to understand that's how we get in front of the customer these days. Now, I look at it like it's pretty cool. So we don't have to be the cutting edge in contracting, because things move a little bit slower, kind of in our realm. So we just really have to kind of pay attention and figure out, well, what are kind of some of the bigger brands and other folks out there in marketing, where are they finding success? And then let me kind of follow that. And if you can do that, you'll be ahead of the curve. So I say that because I'm already like, okay, Facebook is really popular right now with the demographic that I sell to. Now, the cool thing is that demographic is usually a little bit behind, right? The advanced stuff is in the kids, right? They're doing the Snapchats and they're doing whatever else is new. I don't even know.
Yep.
I don't have to be there because my demographic is from the age of 35 to 54, right?
Mm.
They're still on Facebook. Like, they're consuming Facebook at a surprising rate. But with that, I know that the next thing I need to know is where the millennials spending their time. I don't need to know where they're spending their time. I mean, I don't need to be where they're spending their time now because they don't have the money control, right? Because I know my audience, and I know that my audience makes over $150,000 a year. Okay. And so they have to have the disposable income to say, hey, let me spend $5,000 to repaint my house or $4,000 to repaint my cabinets. Like, I know that if you're 26 years old, you've got your first job, you're still trying to pay off your stupid student loans.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, at least that's the state of the economy here in the United States. And so, but I do know that I need to understand where those people are going. So Instagram is where a lot of them are spending a lot of their time. And the cool thing is we've already started to build our audience with Instagram. And like, if you put in paint contractor, like, that's a pretty, like, how would you ever rank for paint contractor on Google, right? Yeah. Well, if you put that into the hashtag search on Instagram, we're like the top five posts.
Ah.
So we're already ahead of the curve. So that's what you've got to understand that. And the great thing is I don't necessarily need to be getting, you know, a bunch of leads there, but I'm already preparing myself for down the road.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I think, from a marketing perspective, you've got to understand where do I get ROI? And I think that's the greatest thing about the fact that we're small business owners now in this world, in where technology is now. Like, we can be competitive. I can beat Sherwin-Williams or Benjamin Moore to paint contractor on Instagram. Like, I can't do that on Google.
No.
But I couldn't have outspent them in Yellow Pages ads 20 years ago to ever, you know, rank on the world, you know, platform.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy so there's amounts ways of money. And so there's ways that we can compete, and it just has never been possible to in the past. And, you know, I was listening to somebody this morning on a podcast, and, you know, if you think about what it used to take to have a television commercial or, God forbid, a television show. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? To record it, to produce it, all that kind of stuff. We literally have that ability in our back pocket now. You know, we can jump on to Facebook Live and start a conversation and have exposure, and we can do that as often and as regular as we want.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, the only thing that stands in the way is people's fear. And I hear that over and over and over, no matter who I talk to, that people, I don't want to be on video. And you just got to get over it. You know, I remember in high school, work, I know this may be surprising for you here, but I was deathly afraid of public speaking. I can remember being in English class and shaking that I had to get up in front of 20 people and talk about something. Like, that was horrible. Well, and now, you know, I literally speak to thousands of people every single day. because of podcasting.
And it's funny you bring that up because I have a very similar background where I seriously suffered from quite elevated levels of social anxiety right through to my late 20s. Mm-hmm. I hated school because there were so many people and it freaked me out. You know, if I had to get up and stand in front of my own class, I used to sweat and shake and, you know, need to go to the toilet several times. And that dogged me for many, many years. And like you, you know, I'm doing videos. I do a lot of video on Facebook and Facebook Live I used to do every week to a few groups. And it's just, I think these platforms give us the opportunity to work on our stuff. But, yeah, I see people who don't, they don't make the choice to confront those things and even attempt to overcome those fears.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said to somebody recently, what's the worst thing that could happen to you if you picked up the telephone and followed up some of the leads that you've got? What is the absolute worst thing that could happen to you?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, well, you know, I could feel stupid and I might stumble my words and they'll think I'm an idiot and they won't buy from me, so I'll lose a customer. And I said, so that's the worst thing that could happen to you. So you can't die. You're not going to get physically harmed.
Right,
and yet
right.
You know that that thing is going to actually help you in your business. So
yeah,
what's actually stopping you from doing that? It's just a choice. It comes down to that choice.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, Nick, choices. What are some of the tough choices you've made in the last couple of years since I spoke to you? Have you had any, you know, been faced with any big decisions?
You know, one of the big decisions we had that I agonized over was whether to get office space or not. Hmm. I for the last, except for this year, for the last 5 or 6 years, we were working out of my house. And I was a little bit afraid because before the economy crashed, we had office space before and, you know, the business almost went under and I moved back to the house to save money. And I really, really tried to just keep as much money into the business as we possibly could. But I saw it coming. I saw us adding people. It was already weird having two people come to my house every day work, and I would leave. <You know? laughs> And it was weird for me, but it was even more weird for them, you know? Mm. And so I looked for a long time. The real estate market here in Denver is really hot, and so prices are high. And I looked and looked and looked and then literally stumbled over this opportunity, which a guy who owns a big landscape company bought an old church. It doesn't look like the traditional church. It's not like the steeple and all that kind of stuff, but it's a more of a modern church. Mm-hmm. And had the backside of the building that wasn't being used. And another friend of mine had talked to him and was saying, hey, you know, what are you doing with the kind of the West Wing, if you will? And they got to talking and he said, well, we're not doing anything with it. What would you, you know, give me an offer. And, so we've moved in here and we couldn't have gotten this kind of space anywhere else for, you know, anything less than twice what we're paying.
Yeah. Right.
And so it was a really good opportunity. We filled it out almost immediately and now we almost need more space. But after we made that decision, then that made another decision easier. We ended up getting a shop for spraying and for our equipment about 3 months later, and so now we have all sorts of overhead on, you know, on rent space now, but it's all being highly used, and we actually charge our customers to pay for the shop area, so we're bringing in money for that, and so that was probably the hardest thing. Other than, as far as decisions, I think the hardest thing we have as a company right now is just getting enough people. You know, we grew 65% or 68% this year over last year. And had we, been on top of our hiring a little bit better, we probably would have brought in another $200,000 or $300,000 worth of, top line revenue. You know, because we ended up having to slow down our marketing efforts because we just couldn't keep up with it. You know, there's one thing to say, hey, you know, if you book with us tomorrow, we can paint your house in 2 months. I mean, that's hard enough to swallow, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that we started to run into, and it's slowed down just because of the holidays right now, but people would call us for an estimate and we'd say, well, I can send somebody out to your house in 2 weeks for an estimate, right?
Yep.
So, you know, when that's the case, we're not putting anything out from an advertising perspective extra. So we still get the word of mouth calls and all those other things. But, so that's been, the hiring thing has been the biggest challenge, I think.
So how have you dealt with that, mate? Because obviously that can really strangle a business, not having enough people to deliver mm-hmm. the work that clearly you're able to generate the leads as a marketer, right. And you're doing that really well. Mm-hmm. But how on earth do you deal with that problem of finding good people?
So I don't know if you remember, but we do hire a little bit differently than most people.
Mm-hmm.
We hire folks that have zero to just a little bit of painting experience because we like to train them from the ground up. And then on top of that, we found kind of a niche in that we hire artists, folks that paint or draw or sketch because they typically are very artsy, right? Which
yep.
means they have tattoos and colored hair and piercings and all this kind of stuff. And we welcome all of that. And so we have found that advertising to that group of people has been easier because nobody else is going after that group of people. We like that group of people for a couple of reasons. We know they like to work with their hands. They have good hand-eye coordination, which is obviously something we have to teach. And they typically have a pretty good even keel personality. Every once in a while we come across a crazy one, but we like the quiet ones that just like to get their work done. And so I have found that as long as I am being intentional, I can always find somebody. It's when I was getting busy and my attention was in other places and I would forget or just get sidetracked doing one of the million of other things that needs to be done around here. That's when we would suffer because then we wouldn't have somebody filling the pipeline. Because I have to think of employees just like I feel like I have to think of filling my marketing funnel.
Yeah.
I have to fill my hiring funnel. It takes me, which is not normal. I know this because I talk to painters all over the country. It takes me about 3 to 4 months to train somebody to be really useful, almost to a lead position. And that comes back to what I told you, what we paint. We don't paint everything under the sun. We only do interior, residential painting. So unlike other paint companies that'll do, house restoration and exterior painting and staining and all these kind of things that really do take a really deep and wide knowledge base to do it right because there's different products and there's techniques and all these kind of things. We don't have to train all those things. We have, we have a dozen or so things that we have to train how to do well. And it has sped up the training process. And so that's a huge competitive advantage that we have over all of our competitors because most painters, and I would say this might even go for the folks down in Australia, is that because they don't like to train, they just want to hire experienced painters. It ends up being just a shell game of paint contractors stealing workers from other paint contractors, right?
Yeah. Yep. So you talked about that training lag, and I know it's an issue for a lot of my listeners. Committing to employing somebody or hiring somebody is a big enough decision in itself, but to then go out and get someone who's not immediately productive, how do you, or what sort of business do you need to build, and what are some of the considerations of bringing someone on that, you're talking about 3 months before they're fully trained? How can you carry somebody like that for that long?
Well, the reality is I have about a week that they're not productive. And after that, they are productive. I would challenge almost any contractor because I'm in this chat room on Facebook and it's got like 13,000 painters in it, right? And I posed the question. I said, fill in the blank. I spend 80% of my time doing blank. And overwhelmingly, probably 9 out of 10 answers was prep work. And so that confirmed what I already believed. So if 80% of our time is spent covering floors, taping baseboards, cleaning brushes, putting plastic on things, you know, all of the kind of prep stuff, like I don't need to spend $25 an hour for a guy to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think in any business that's in the trades, because I've done other things in the past. I don't know if we talked about it, but I used to do flooring and kind of light remodeling.
Yep.
And so let's take a tile guy. So in tile, you've got all sorts of like demo that you have to do. And to my knowledge, I don't think it takes a ton of skill and training to learn how to like break up tile and put it in the trash. And then you've got carrying tile into the house. Like that's a huge thing, right? Because if you're doing a whole house, like just boxes and boxes and it's heavy and all that stuff. Like, again, I don't want to pay a $25 an hour guy for that. And I would venture to guess that almost in any trade, you've got a lot of those kinds of tasks, right? And especially if you have, let's say your team is like a team of three guys, right, that are fairly experienced. And let's say they're doing trim carpentry. Well, I'm pretty sure there's enough work for a fourth person that would do nothing but sweep, move wood around, you know, set up the different things that they've got to do, tear out old material. Like there's just so much stuff that can be done. And then it's just a matter of adding one thing at a time. Like, all right, let's teach somebody about cutting miters, you know?
Yep.
And so for the whole month, you're going to do all of our miter cuts, right? You get pretty damn good at doing that after doing that for a month, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I think most people don't teach well. And I do come from a little bit of a teaching background earlier and when I was in my younger days. And I just learned that in order to get somebody to do something, you have to, there's just a couple of phases. So you first show them how to do it, then you watch them do it, then you correct them, then you watch them do it again, and then you correct them again. And hopefully by that time, they kind of have it. And then you just kind of have to keep monitoring it. And so it's not really hard, but I think guys get so busy and they're like, well, I've got all this work to do. I can't take 5 minutes out of my day to go show somebody how to do something. But if you do take that, let's say you take the 10 minutes, okay, to show them how to do this. Well, now you don't have to do the 40 hours a week that they're going to help you do. So you can make the money with all the high dollar items, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So.
And it's something that you said there I want to sort of grab hold of. And it's giving them, I guess, the simpler tasks to start with, even though they're not doing the ultimate thing that you employed them to do, which might be, you know, painting by themselves or sort of higher level tasks. Mm-hmm. They're being productive at some level rather mm-hmm. than having this mindset that, well, if I employ somebody untrained, they're just kind of going to be hanging around costing me money, but they can mm-hmm. be learning and freeing you up from doing things or freeing up mm-hmm. a more experienced team member if you've got a bigger team, and sort of pushes everybody up the chain, up the family tree.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes a little bit of planning. Like you've got to make sure you're doing things in the proper order so that the other person does consistently have something to do. But we, you know, most of our projects are pretty big, and our lead painters, honestly, we tell them that the only thing that they should be doing on the project, once you've got your prep kind of fully trained, the only thing that they really should be doing is cutting in lines on the ceiling. I mean, that's one thing out of a big project.
Yeah.
And so everything else is pretty easy for us. And so a lot of things can be broken down in that way. And so there's a lot, I hear this when I'm in paint chat rooms, like they talk about craft and they talk about how hard it is to get to their level and how good they are. And, you know, I'm not a perfectionist, and I think, success, one of the enemies of success is perfection. And that's because things can't ever be perfect.
Yeah.
And so when you get something to a level that's really good, that's good. That's really good enough. Because, you know, when you're going for perfection, it'll just never get there. You know, I have a brother-in-law and he's a fantastic trim carpenter, like master craftsman level, right?
Yep.
But he could never make any money because it's never perfect enough for him.
Mm.
You know, and I'm an okay painter. I would honestly say that, like, especially now that I don't, you know, it's been probably a decade since I was actually on a painting project, but we offer this really great experience for our customers. I don't need to be a master painter, and none of my guys need to be. I may have one guy that I would probably consider a master painter, but we're not painting the Sistine Chapel. You know, we're painting houses. And in fact, we're doing a task that just about all of our homeowners could do themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and we have the right tools. Yeah.
But we have the right tools. We know the right process. And so we're going to be a lot more efficient and we're going to produce really great results. So.
Yep. So now I know we're going to probably run into your time limit for our chat today, mate. So I'm keen to extract as much as I can out of you in the time available. So back to the whole Facebook thing, like 12 times return on investment, 15 times return on investment. I wrote this down earlier. You said you will probably, based on your projections and past performance, generate $1 million in business just from Facebook.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In the coming year, or I think...
In 2018,
yeah,
yes.
Yep. So, I'm sure there's people out there listening to that going, how the bloody hell does he do that? What's... And I know we chatted about this a couple of years ago when you were on the show, Nick, and I think it's worth revisiting because the landscape has changed so much, and I'm sure it will continue to shift. You know, the things that do work, the things that used to work that no longer work, as far mm-hmm. as marketing broadly, but more specifically that online space. And I love that mm-hmm. image that you painted for us before, pun intended, mate. I walk around public spaces and everyone's got their head down in their mm-hmm. in their freaking phone. So it makes sense that if that's where they're looking, that we get ourselves in front of them there because they're not looking at buses and TV ads and listening to radio.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the evolution of your content marketing and in particular your Facebook presence and how you're getting those results?
So I'm not going to revisit everything that we talked about last time.
No, we'll run out of time, mate.
So you'll have people that are interested need to go back to what episode did you say that was?
123.
20
makes it
123. Okay. Yep. Yeah, nice. So go back and listen to that. Really, those truths have not changed for me. But what I will say as a reminder, so go back and listen to that, and then understand that you are not selling. I see this over and over and over in Facebook posts that people do, you know, for business purposes. And so I'll constantly see somebody post an image and they'll say, call for a free estimate today. And I'm like, no, because nobody will share that. As soon as you sound like you're selling, someone's not going to share and hit the like button because that's going to go into their feed, right?
Yeah.
And so... you know, you want to share images that people are interested in. So people are very interested in painted cabinets right now. So for us, we have a lot of images. If people go to our Facebook page, Walls by Design, you'll see a lot of images of cabinets, you know, before and afters. And then I'll do something, you know, fun and funny, or just, hey, check this out. This one really turned out nice. Like it's really super basic. I don't follow any of the, you know, the standard marketing rules of having a call to action and making sure you know, have a phone number so they know how to get in touch with you. It's Facebook. They know how. There's like a million ways that they can reach out and connect with me. I've had people email me. I've had people call our phone number. I've had people message me. I've had people comment in there, hey, here's my phone number. you know, have your office call me, like every which way under the sun, they figure it out. Like it's not rocket science. So you don't need to go and put your phone number everywhere and say, here's my email. You just don't have to do that. Because we really want people to engage, hit the like button, hit the share button, tag friends of theirs. I mean, it's on a daily basis. I see people tagging, you know, their spouse, to show them, you know, an image that we have shared. And so those are kind of some of the truths. Now, some of the things, you know, people, what I like about Facebook is that, you know, people in a small geographic area, they know other people and they're friends with them. And so they're friends with them, not only in their community, but on Facebook. And so once they start to like and follow me, then those images and those postings end up going into their friend's feed, and their friend's name is then associated with that post. And so that's really where the magic starts to come in. And so when you start out a campaign, you really want to start in a small geographic area, like one city or two cities that are next to each other. And you start to get that following. And then, you know, now, I mean, people know me all over the town, and it's because of Facebook. Now, I will say we're really interested in trying to capture more and try to make it even bigger ROI. So I said we did 15 times ROI this year, and I'm pushing for 25. And the way I think I can do it is Facebook has given preferential treatment to Facebook Live because they're trying to push that platform.
Yep.
And so I already have a big following. We have almost 8,000 people that follow me. Now, for a big brand, that means nothing. Like 8,000 is ridiculous. But in a small geographic area, 8,000 followers is a lot. I have yet to see another painting company that's privately owned, that's not like a franchise, have more followers than us. And so I get to leverage that when I go on Facebook Live, because as soon as I go live, it goes into all of my feed. Like I don't think that they're selective on that yet. I think it immediately goes and says, you know, Nick May or Walls by Design is online. Watch them live now.
Yep.
And then after I have ended that live chat or that event, then it further gets promoted as a video in their feed as well. Now, I don't think it's as prevalent as when Facebook Live goes on, but it is treated higher and with more preference than just a regular post.
Yep.
And so then once I get a little bit of traction with that, then I can promote it and boost that video and get even more traction. And those are all lower cost per impression kind of ads, because they're people that are following me. And so we're going to go to a platform where I'm actually going live once to twice a week on regular intervals. And we're going to start to leverage industry partners. So because I have this big audience now, I can leverage that for other people. And so here's how I'm going to do that. So I have 8,000 people that follow me, and I'm going to start going live at 1:30 on Wednesdays. Why 1:30 on Wednesdays? It's because I have a large percentage of my followers are female, and they're stay-at-home moms. 1:30 is because it's after lunch, but it's before they have to go pick up the kids. So that's kind of my mentality on why I've picked that time.
Yep.
And I've picked Wednesday because it's in the middle of the week and it's far, far away from the weekends when they've got lots of activities that they got to plan for. So then what I can do is I can go to an interior designer that I'm friends with, you know, because I podcast and they all know me and all that kind of stuff. So I can grab an interior designer, go to their showroom or go to a showroom at the design center, and we can talk trends. So now I'm not going to be talking, hey, buy my stuff. I'm going to be promoting somebody else. And that person is also going to be promoting me, right? And the content that I'm going to be sharing is not necessarily painting, which isn't always the most exciting thing. So it'll be about interior design, which a lot of my followers are always interested in, you know, what trends are going on, you know, what's something in the showroom. And so with all of those combined leverage points, I believe we can actually get higher than 25% or 20, 25 times ROI. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So really, the premise of all of that is that you're not selling on Facebook. I mean, this is a pretty old rule and it still stands. You're not selling on Facebook. You're engaging people and creating content that they are interested in. It's useful. It's you know, it's shareable content. And that's how you're getting inquiries.
Yeah. And every once in a while we'll do something on Paint, but for the most part, we're going to be promoting other people. They're going to be sharing it with their audience, which is different than mine. And we're going to be putting out content that my audience is going to go, oh, I wonder what Nick's doing today, right?
Do you ever sell on Facebook, Nick? Like, do you have offers or click here to book or anything like that?
No, I don't.
Wow. $1 million of business and you don't have click to buy. It kind of goes against a lot of...
There's a book title. There's a book title in there somewhere. $1 million on Facebook, never sold one thing.
Yeah. But it goes against some of the standard teachings, I guess. And there's always exceptions to rules, but...
I know you follow a lot of those guys, those marketing guys online. And no, I don't follow any of the standard rules of what people tell you to do.
Yeah.
But I don't think you've probably heard too many people having the results that I've had.
No, not from the traditional create an ad, build a landing page, run a special offer of some sort, and you know, drive them to an email list and then sell the crap out of them and hope they buy.
Right. Yeah. Now when I first started, it was a slower go. You know, we weren't knocking down any doors, you know, right out of the gate. Mm. But if you remember correctly, when I first shared the story, I started doing $50 on Facebook, just here or there, promoting things that I thought my audience was interested in, which was painted cabinets, which I knew because that's everything I saw on Pinterest and Instagram and the television shows and all that stuff. So I knew people were interested in it. And one day I looked up and I thought, man, I have spent about $1,000 over the course of a couple of months, but I've sold $10,000. And I thought, gosh, maybe I'm onto something. And so that's where the journey began. And I just started doing more and more and more and, you know.
Yes, it's interesting, mate, to see that you've done that very differently to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And look, I have to admit, when people talk to me, trades and contractors talk to me about using Facebook, I pretty much just spout the same stuff that I've been told, which is, yep, you need to run a campaign and you've got to have a landing page and then you've got to build an email list and then you remarket to them and then, you know, you still do the helpful content thing. You know, you need a free download or something to bribe them into giving you their email list, but you're not doing any of that.
No, I think, you know, that's one thing that we would like to do better at this year is collecting emails and doing better email campaigns. But the truth is...
you're going to make $1 million out of Facebook without doing that, mate.
Right. And I just personally don't like email marketing for the most part because I don't open any of those, right? Like, we all get spammed with email marketing stuff. So we try to be very selective of how much email stuff we put out. And again, I take a little bit... Well, pretty much the same tactic with emails. I don't try to sell stuff. I try to add value and get in front of my customers. And so when we do send out emails, I think our open rate's typically in the 40 to 50% range, which is super high for email, right?
Yeah. That's phenomenal, mate.
Yeah. So we're typically saying, hey, I don't know if you remember, but we do a free touch-up program for our customers. So as long as they live in their house, we'll come back once a year and do that program, but we only do it in January and February. So we send out emails right around this time of the year and say, hey, just to remind you this January and February, we'd love to schedule a time for us to come out and touch up, the house. Mm. And so those are the kinds of emails we send out. So they're like pretty excited about getting emails from us.
Hey, let us come and touch up your walls. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm keen then, given that, and we won't talk more about your previous results, although they're pretty spectacular and very impressive, mate. And well done, by the way. I mean, it's to do things differently to what the gurus are saying takes guts and a whole lot of faith. And it's always nice to see people who back themselves to do that sort of thing. So it's great to see those results, Nick. But what's your predictions or guesstimates of, you know, if you look forward to next year, $1 million potentially from Facebook, you know, they're always trying to revamp the platform and keep us all interested in spending money on on campaigns. Where do you think this is all going? What do you think some of the big or maybe even the small changes or pivots that will happen with perhaps your marketing and marketing in general?
You know, I know video is super, it's everywhere right now as far as Facebook and Instagram. They all, you know, they all started these video feeds. And it'll be interesting to see how that changes over the next year, because they've, you know, they've had a couple of updates. And, you know, just a year ago, I don't even know if we were doing, I guess we were doing Facebook Live, but I don't think Instagram Live was a year ago.
No.
But here's the other thing. I don't know how it's all going to play into it, but podcasting is huge. And the platform for podcasting, there's so much opportunity because it's such a personal experience. You know, you have an audience that listens to you every week, right? You put out every week.
Yep. Yep.
And so people know you intimately, and there's no other media that you can use and have that kind of extended attention, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
And so I'm interested to see what we see changes wise in the podcasting world, technologies for the different platforms. I'm totally disgusted with what you know, the App Store and what Apple has done with podcast, because it's just horrible. And there's got to be some kind of app coming out at some point that helps us engage a little bit better with our listeners to get feedback and all of that kind of stuff. But you just look at all the brands. Like, that's why we're expanding our platform under IMA Media, and to say, hey, we'd like to help other folks, you know, build a podcast platform. Now, I don't know about podcasting from a small regional area. Like, I've thought about it lots of times. Like, is there a podcast that I could put out for like Denver, like for me to get attention with homeowners in Denver? And I just can't figure out a way to do it. But you know, maybe there's an opportunity there, but I don't know. I'm not I kind of like to, the nice thing is that we're in an industry that lags a little bit behind, everything else. And so we can just kind of figure out after the fact of what's become popular. And then if you jump on somewhat quickly, then you can take advantage of it. Because right now, I mean, Facebook has been like, it's hot right now, and I think there's some people that are saying, you know, in another 5 years maybe it's not going to be as cost effective, so it might just be way more expensive just because it's become so popular. You know, it's like, we don't remember back to the early days of email, but in the early days of email, if you got on that bandwagon for email marketing, like you had like 90% open rates, because people were just excited to get email. You know, oh, I have an email, and I got an email. Oh my gosh, let me open it.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, oh my God, I got another email.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, I get all these filters, and I got hundreds of things that go into my spam folders every single day, and they still come through, right?
Yeah.
Well, same thing. It's like, it's an undervalued advertising platform right now. There's it's getting a lot of attention. I can only hope that it stays there, but I don't have any visions of grandeur. And so that's why I look in the landscape and I go, okay, where else do I got to go? Where else do I need to be planning for down the road? And for me and for my market, that's Instagram. So we're trying to prepare for that.
Mm. So, basically, video is still the thing. You know, if someone's sitting there going, well, what's my focus going to be for my marketing in 2018 as a contractor or a tradesperson? Like, what will you be telling your clients or your mastermind members about?
Yeah, I would say if you had any money to put into marketing, I would double down on Facebook ads. Like, I would just figure it out. Like, take $2,000 and don't spend it all at once, but slowly start trying it. Don't outsource it to somebody else. Play with it yourself. See what you get a result with, and then do more of that and less of the things that you don't get a good result in. And that's what we sit down at the end of the year and we look at all of our ROI things, you know, all of our activities that we've done. And I had to kick off two things on my list. One was getting 8x ROI and one was getting 9x ROI. And we said, well, those are just the bottom two. So let's just not do those anymore.
Let's strike
and put
them
it
off.
Into, right. So let's put it into the 25 and the 35x ROI. Like, that makes way more sense. Right. So that's, you know, that's the kind of things that I'm doing. But if you have very limited funds, I would put it all into Facebook. Like, once you have the basics, and the basics, I say, you've got to have a good Facebook page. So that doesn't cost anything. You've got to have a good business card. That costs a little bit of money, but really it's almost free. Mm. And then you've got to have a good website that looks good, so that it doesn't necessarily have to convert and drive traffic and have all the Google search and all that kind of stuff. But it needs to be a place where when you do meet somebody and they do get your business card and they go back to their house, or they jump on their phone and they go, oh, let me see this guy's business. And they go on your website and it looks modern. It looks clean. They can easily navigate it. Like, that doesn't take that much money. It doesn't take thousands of dollars like it used to. Like, I always tell people, go to my website. That cost me, I think, if I spent $350 on that thing, that's probably more than I spent, right?
Wow. And $350 on a website.
Yes. Mm. That's all I spent to build my original website. Now, there's lots of hours in adding content and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But the general framework for that is, it was a template and we customized it. And I did most of that. Yeah. And so those are the basics. Those are the three basics I always start. And that's where I start with all of the guys that I talk to and trying to help them. And so get those three basics down, and then let's figure out all this other stuff, right? Some the little bit more of the advanced stuff. Mm. But I will also tell people, don't start marketing until you have the systems in your business and you know what you're doing. Because if you start marketing and you don't have good systems, then you're throwing money down the drain.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother talk that we'll have to do a whole nother podcast on, because
you're going to have to go, man.
Because I do have to get off and do another one of my new podcasts, actually.
Yeah, cool. Hey, one quick question. I'll see if you can answer this quickly. What's one wish you have for 2018?
I only get one.
You've only got time for one, mate.
Oh, okay.
Well, just tell us what they are without the detail, perhaps, if you've got more than one.
Well, I want to make twice as much money as I made last year. Mm-hmm. And I want to be out of my business, out of my office, 50% of the time.
Mm. Doing what?
Just out. Like, that may be podcasting. Maybe I'm traveling a lot for the podcast. I'm taking a little bit of vacation. I'd like to take a little bit more vacation. I've gotten to go to Spain. I went in February, and I'll go again this year in March. Mm-hmm. Because of one of my podcast sponsors. And I get to take my wife on that, so that's really fun.
Mm-hmm, nice.
I guess that. Those are the two things.
Cool, man.
So many things are going in the right direction that, you know, it's
certainly seems that
it's
way.
It's been exciting.
Yeah. And I'll commit to checking in with you maybe in a few months or something, and we'll have another chat, mate, and we'll dig a little deeper on a few of these issues, because we sort of skimmed over the surface of a lot of stuff. Which has been great, but I don't want to leave it 2 years until we chat again, mate, because I'm keen to follow your journey and your growth.
No. It's fun. I'd love to join you as often as you'd have me.
I think there's a lot of lessons in there for trades and contractors all over the planet. And yeah, if we can dig some more out, mate, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And besides, I love listening to your American accent, man. It's just so cool. Thanks,
man. I love it.
All right, dude. Well, thanks so much for your time, Nick. I know you've got to go and do another episode somewhere else. It's been awesome having you on the show. I wish you and your family a fantastic Christmas and holiday season, mate.
Thanks. Can I plug my newest podcast?
Hey, go for it. Yeah, where
I don't think I mentioned it once.
No. So where do listeners have to go to subscribe to your podcast, just in case they want to add another one to the list?
That's right. I would just add, not replace.
Not replace. Yeah.
But join me over at The Business Brush. And that is where I'm talking about paint contracting, but you can replace paint with wood or bricks or tile or anything. So
cool.
The Business Brush, we're in iTunes, we're in Stitcher. I think we're even on Google Play. I don't know how we got there, but I think we are.
We can't do that here in Australia.
No, can't do that?
No, we can't submit to Google Play yet. It's not available in our region. So unless I do some weird techo stuff and create a fake site. But I've tried to get mine onto Spotify, but it's not showing up. So anyway, figure that out.
Well, fantastic. This was fun to catch up with your work.
Yeah, thanks, man. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll speak to you in 2018, dude.
Awesome.
Cheers, buddy. There you go. Another episode, another guest. Nick's one of the best guests I've had on the show. I love his passion for business and trying new things and staying up to date. And he made some really good points in there about, you know, that whole thing that I talked about at the top of the show about adapt or die. So he's off taking a break. Well, he was, because I'm doing this after Christmas because I took a break, as I said. It's the first year I pretty much switched off my devices and just chilled out. Didn't really check emails or anything for multiple days at a time. It was great. Anyway, that's our first episode for 2018. I hope it's shaping up to be an awesome year already. I am looking forward to bringing you more content. I've got some more guests lined up. I'm pumped up for a great year ahead, and I hope you are too. So hang around. Stay tuned. There'll be another episode coming your way. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell. Want to get off the tools and into true business ownership? Find out how at tradiesbusinessshow.com.